accession number 19389, Reel 3.
Reel 3. In a direct rifle shot from the top centre of our position to the top centre of the Chinese position, would have been about a 200-yard shot. That's about all. Just a saddle between the two of us. Anyway, the American planes circle around, and then the first one came in to attack. They had a mixture of napalm and rockets, as I recall, but anyway, the first bloke came in his flight, and we're all in our trench like boys at the circus, peering over the top and watching this with great excitement. And this poor bugger in the first jet, he came sailing down, let go with his rockets, and at that point when he would have been pulling back on his joystick, they cut his tail clean off with a burst, presumably from a fairly large caliber, 50 caliber maybe. So he didn't execute his pulling out of the dive, he went straight into the ground between our two features. And his plane just disintegrated. There was literally nothing left any bigger than a dinner plate. So his mates circled up top and obviously decided that this wasn't of any great advantage attacking there anymore, and they left. Later on during the course of the day, I had the opportunity with a couple of my friends to pussyfoot down to this crater to see if we could find something, some remains of the pilot or anything, because the Chinese used to keep a low head during the day. We could move around in the open, and they wouldn't give themselves away, they'd stay hidden. Well, all we found was this rather large room-sized crater with the breech blocks of his cannon just barely visible in the bottom of the hole. The cannons must have been well and truly buried straight down. And everything else was like a confetti. I say they'd cut his tail off completely cleanly, and the rest of the plane had just gone woof at maximum rev straight into the ground. No sign of even a scrap of the pilot. He must have just disintegrated. So that was that. We got out of there, went back. I'm not sure how long we were on this, but it was probably the most nerve-wracking place that I was ever on, because we were there for quite some weeks.
What was the name of the feature?
It didn't have a name. It's a map reference. In our battalion war diary at Holsworthy, there is no mention of B Company being detached to the 7th Cavalry, 3rd Infantry Division, and there is only a mention with a map reference of an outpost that we were on, and that obviously was where we were. It has no name, and it has no history. And the only people that know it exists were the fellows that were on it, and a few of the other fellows from B Company that were certainly on the pine-covered ridge and knew we were across the river on the other one. So it's pretty limited. I say you'd be flat out finding 30 or 40 people that even know that this place existed. So living on our nerves for 3 weeks or so, very little sleep, and starting to wear thin. I remember our platoon commander was getting a bit jumpy. A couple of us hadn't shaved often enough for his liking, and he went stark raving mad. He was going to charge us and do all sorts of things, which is not usually the accepted practice in the Australian Army. So I think he was starting to get a bit stroppy. Anyway, they decided to pull us out after a final bit too much harassment from our Chinese friends, and they sent the tanks across from the Irish, what are they called, Irish Inniskillen Dragoons or something?
Inniskillen Dragoon Guards,
yeah. That's it. They sent them across, a couple of their tanks, and they got us out early one morning, covered us. We went back and rejoined the company on this pine-covered feature. We were living pretty rough then because the damn ground was so hard up there, you were almost impossible to dig a fighting pit, let alone a foxhole. And it was starting to rain a fair bit. Everyone was cold, wet, and miserable. And they let a couple of days go by, and this annoyed me somewhat too. They when they pulled us out, they thought, well, we thought that was that. And those of us that had any excess gear that we weren't prepared to carry right back, we left it behind booby trap for the Chinese to find. And after 2 days, we found out that somebody had had a change of mind and they'd put a Filipino company where we were. So I have no doubt that a couple of poor Filipinos received a very unexpected surprise when they went to check on this equipment. Anyway, the Chinese attacked and totally annihilated those poor buggers that first night they were there. They never even gave them time to settle in. So they must have had enough of this nonsense, plain silly buggers. So they totally destroyed that company. And then after that, 3 Battalion got the Wanders. We finished up out in reserve. We were over near the Hook. We were over near a place called Castle Hill. We had our first good snowfall. We were sleeping on the side of the hill, and I woke up in the morning wondering what on earth was going on, and sat up and I was covered in snow, and all I could see around the rest of the hill were these little mounds with a blowhole, a little puff of steam coming up out of the blowhole where the fellas were asleep underneath, and their breath was coming out. And every now and then one of these little mounds would suddenly erupt. A startled digger would be looking around to see what was going on. So that was quite amusing.
But coming back to that place where you said that it didn't have any name or that just map reference. Where was the battalion HQ at that time?
We don't know. We have not a clue, but it was just B Company detached from the battalion to the Americans. And as far as B Company is concerned, I mean, no doubt the platoon commander and the company commander could have told you. But we diggers had no idea and weren't really worried about it. We were just concerned about where we were. I have an idea that they were in the initial stages of withdrawing the battalion, and they may have been pulled out. They could have been behind the lines altogether.
But what was the nearest hill to your position, nearest big hill?
The nearest big hill? Well, the big hill was the one we're on, which, as I said, is now the site of a South Korean observation post. The number eludes me now. But if you wish to face north, you'd probably be going, these are guesses, of course, 2 or 3 miles across to the west and coming to 355, and then northwest you'd be coming to 317. The hill the Americans were attacking, this was on the time when the Americans were frantically trying to take places like White Horse Mountain and things like that, that were all rather famous at the time, but forgotten now.
And which month was that?
This would have been November, December. 51.
So, going back to the chronology, you said afterwards you were in this rest area. What happened then?
They had 3 battalion in a reserve situation, and of course the Cosbys had lost 317, which hadn't done much for the battalion that took it. We were rather browned off at the time. There was some talk of retaking it, but I believe Frank Hassett flatly refused to take the battalion back and try and recapture 317. Then somebody, it may have been the Canadians, were on 355 and were careless enough to lose a portion of that. And they looked like sending 3 battalion back to redress the wrongs on 355. But if it was the Canadians, well, it either had to be Canadians or Americans, because they're the only ones that ever lost it, or lost part of it. They got it back again before 3 battalion had to venture forth. So we stayed out on reserve until probably January of 52, I think. We were equipped with some fairly substantial winter clothing by this time, thank goodness. We were getting British gear. Prior to that, we were wearing whatever we could steal from whoever we could steal it. And we got this pretty good British gear, including boots, Arctic-type boots, and underwear, and you know, the whole box and dice. So life was improving greatly for us then. And we went back into the line. We went back into the line at a place which is known as the bowling alley. This, of course, was the beginning of the static war. After 317 was lost, the divisional positions hardly changed from then on. If they did, it was only on a temporary basis. We had no great territorial ambitions, and the Chinese wanted 355 rather desperately, and they also wanted some of the territory down the hook rather desperately. But they couldn't get them, and if they did get them, they couldn't keep them. So basically, our position stayed fairly static from then on. And we were on the bowling alley. We had the dire misfortune to take over from the French Canadian Vandoos. I think I better end that story there with saying that the French Canadian Vandoos would have to be the most primitive white race on the face of this earth. Their hygiene is non-existent. Nothing else about them is existent either. So we took over from them, and it was abject squalor. It took us ages to clean the place up. They didn't have the valley in front of them control because they never patrolled it. The Chinese were coming right up to our wire, doing whatever they liked. The wire was in dreadful condition. So we had to get control of the valley, which took a while. B, we had to do a lot of extensive rewiring. C, we had to reclaim even our own territory, like spurs. There was a spur ran down off our feature that B Company was on, and it was at that stage pretty well wooded, and it was to all intents and purposes a Chinese outpost. So we had to reclaim that. One of my boys, one of my mates, lost his bloody leg on a Chinese mine there. He jumped into a little fighting pit and they had it booby-trapped. So he lost his leg. And we had to do all these things because of the slackness of the Vandus, that they were no other way of describing it, just the slackness of the Vandus. So eventually we got control of the valley to a main degree. I mean, the Chinese still contested it. They still sent regular patrols out. They still probed. But it wasn't like Piccadilly Circus for them anymore. And it became a sort of a fairly regular area where there'd be patrol clashes, ambushes. We'd lose a few, the Chinese would lose a few. And then we handed it over to one of our sister British battalions. I can't remember which one now. Blow it if I can. But it remained in our brigade's possession and was kept in good shape from then on. Then we must have gone out of reserve again, and by this time winter would be over. Now, at Christmas 51, we were blessed with a visit from our Minister for the Army, Mr. Ford, the Right Honourable Member, great fat oaf. He came and visited the battalion, and they had receptions set up for him at various places at each company, I think, whereby he'd come and grace us with his presence, go and have nibblies with the officers and down a bottle of scotch. But the thieving bastards had knocked off all the bottle of scotches before he got there. They were gone, which caused a fair hue and cry, I can assure you. Anyway, he got his nibblies but didn't get his scotch. So from the bowling alley we went, I cannot remember where, no doubt had a rest and strengthened up and tarted up, and then we went in at the Samichon Valley. About midway down the Samichon Valley, and once again we had the delightful experience, the last time, thank goodness, of taking over from the Vandus. Same old story, filth, squalor, accommodation fit for a pig, and so we went through all that rigmarole again. Later, a CO of ours, actually from 2 Battalion, I think it was, refused to take over a position from the Vandus. Flat out refused to relieve them, conditions that they were leaving them, which caused a bit of a hue and cry. But after that, I don't think we ever had any more dealings with the Vandus, which was a good thing. So then we're on the Samichon Valley. We must be into what? Summer 52, I guess, by now. Yeah, I'd say we would be. Summer 52. And
was the Samichon Valley a hot place?
Climatically or China?
No, I mean from the fighting point of view.
It had its ups and downs. It was a place that was constantly patrolled by both sides. There were frequent clashes. But we had more or less had a gentleman's agreement there. You don't harass us too much, we won't bother you too much. So everyone would go through the motions. We'd ambush them sometimes, they'd ambush us sometimes, but nobody attacked anybody else until August 13th to 14th of August. The American hierarchy decided they desperately wanted a prisoner. Why they wanted a prisoner, we could never understand. And they knew all the time who was opposite and all the rest of it, but no, they were forever wanting a prisoner. So it was decided that B Company would mount a raid on the feature known as 7-5, which was, once again, and the Imogen River features around here too, it was almost on the banks of the Imogen River, on the Chinese side of the valley, and known to be occupied. So it was decided B Company would do a boys' own charge up 7-5, snaffle a couple of prisoners, and dash back home again. Everything was thought out splendidly. We had four platoon as our reserve platoon. Five platoon was reserve come stretcher party platoon. They were to remain at the bottom, and six platoon was to do the assault. So we completely outfoxed the Chinese, and we came across the valley, heading north, followed along the Imogen River, then crossed this creek that ran along the bottom of this 7-5 feature, and came up from where they didn't expect us, from the direction of their own main lines. And everything was going jolly. We'd been given Canadian flak jackets for this, for the 6th Platoon had. Very first time we ever had these flak jackets. And we'd also been loaned an American flamethrower, which our platoon sergeant, one Max Fruin, had been given the honour of carrying. We had a lieutenant by the name of Ludwig Zwolonski, just call me George. He was Polish. He fought in the Free Polish Forces at Arnhem, and he won the Polish equivalent of the Victoria Cross, I believe it was, at Arnhem. He swam across the river and helped them out of a lot of unpleasantness there. George is a terrific soldier, but his one basic problem, he was an alcoholic. He used to get us into some terrible trouble when he was half sloshed. Anyway, 6th Platoon was up to 38 men in strength for this boys' own rally up 7-5. And we had 7 and 9 section leading an extended line. Platoon headquarters in the middle, slightly to the rear, only slightly, with 8 section at the rear and extended line as reserve. So we're pussyfooting very quietly. Oh, before we attacked, the artillery and the tanks, and even a couple of our 17-pounders, as I recall, had been hammering the hell out of the top of this 7-5. It had a trench line around the top of it, and it was thought to be, pardon me, manned by a platoon. Anyway, they pummeled the living bejesus out of the trench up on the top. And then at 2400 hours, everything stopped and away we went. We encountered a couple of, outpost fellas, I suppose they were. They were in a very shallow trench down the bottom slopes of the 7-5, and they took off like a couple of startled rabbits. If they'd have stopped and been taken prisoner, everyone would have been happy, but they wouldn't be in that. They bolted, fired a few bursts in our general direction to start with, which antagonised everyone, and at least 8 people shot them. They were totally riddled. So then Charlie knew we were coming, and we encountered another reasonably shallow trench about midway up 7-5. There were some in it, I think about 6. We had a bit of a firefight and polished them off. And then 7 and 9 section passed over this, and platoon headquarters and 8 section had got in a bit of strife. Some Chinese were starting to appear from bolt holes, camouflage holes in the ground, and they'd push the lid back and shove the burp gun out and open up. So there was a bit of chaos going on behind us, and then of course they started popping up behind us. And one of our fellows got a full burst from a burp gun in the chest on his flak jacket, finished up with the most massive bruise, but not one of them penetrated his jacket. Another bloke got a similar burst in the back, and he likewise finished up with a huge bruise, but none of the bullets penetrated the flak jacket. So anybody that tells you those flak jackets were useless wasn't wearing one when they were shot with a burp gun. Well, then we lost our flamethrower. There's no point in being coy due to the gutless behaviour of our platoon sergeant who threw it away and tried to bolt. He got shot by one of our own people, which you won't find written down in the history either. He's out with a wounded in action, but I don't say that he was shot by one of us. So there, no flamethrower, and a bit of chaos going on back in platoon headquarters, and the reserve platoon has just left 7 and 9 platoon. We went up the hill 38 strong to start with. That's including, they'd bolstered us up with a few blokes from support company, I think. And as we got near the top, they opened fire with a 30 caliber machine gun, which caused a bit of serious damage. It didn't stop for flak jackets, it went straight through. And they started pitching satchel bombs, and I think also those anti-tank grenades, the big bell-shaped anti-tank grenades. my mate Max Wilson, the bloke that got the burst, who I was convinced was dead, I might add, I'd seen him go down near me like a pole ex goanna. He suddenly appeared from nowhere, dashed past, and proceeded to clobber this machine gun nest and killed the occupants, all bar one, which he carelessly left. He missed this bloke. And so that put the machine gun out of action. And then by this time we were getting a little thin on the ground. There was myself, Johnny Gill, Max Wilson. We were left on the, as we looked at it, the right-hand side of the feature. I could hear a bit of shooting and grenading going on around the left, but there weren't too many of our people galloping around at all. Anyway, this fella popped up out of this machine gun nest and tossed a grenade, and he nailed Max Wilson. And down went Max. But this fella was this Chinaman, he was a little bit silly in that he stood up long enough to admire his handiwork and long enough for me to nail him with the own gun. He was only about 10 yards away at the most, if that. So I gave him a burst from the Owen, then I threw a grenade in the hole with him too to make sure the